I'm Lydia. This is Hits Live on iVillage Radio. Joining the program right now, the family therapist on parentsplace.com. You can get to her page by going, clicking on the babies section on iVillage.com and then going to experts. And then you can find the family therapist and click on her page and get to Dr. Gail Peterson's page. And lots of great information, including her message boards, Making Healthy Families and an Easier Childbirth. How are you doing, Dr. Gail?
Great. And, you know, Lydia, I might mention that people can get answers almost immediately the same day to any of their questions if they go to my bio on parentsplace.com/expert/family and they click on to the Healthy Making Healthy Families message board.
Okay.
They can put anything there and I'll answer it, you know, within probably usually 24 hours.
Wow.
So
very good.
That's just something to be aware of, that
right.
And the An Easier Childbirth message board, you know, about pregnancy and birth
mm-hmm.
and prenatal.
Mm-hmm. And all those
bonding.
All those questions. Well, I have some questions I'm going to have to go to the message board for.
Great.
I have some ones I'm going to have to go to the message board for. Let's get to the ones we got from our listeners. The first topic is how to give my biracial children the best of both worlds. This comes to us from Anna. Dr. Gail, I'm the mother of a 2-year-old son. I'm white. His father's black. I would love some feedback on ways to give him the best of both worlds. I would also appreciate any advice on how to handle disapprovers. Any input on multiracial children would be a great help.
Well, that's a very good question because, you know, we so often categorize people superficially. You know, we were talking about that in terms of age, but,
right.
you know, superficially in terms of appearances. So a
mm-hmm.
child who is half African-American and half white will be identified as black, you know, because of how he or she looks, when actually they're grounded in both worlds, as Anna puts it. And, you know, the first thing is clearly to recognize that this mix of having an African-American father and a white mother will be different than either of the parents have experienced. So it's completely unique. In order to understand their child, they have to remember that. And also to support, you know, his or her knowledge, the child's knowledge, and of, you know, really pride on both sides of the family. But, you know, this isn't any different than most families or, you know, we always want to promote pride on both sides of the family for any child.
Right.
But what is different here, you know, which is what Anna really is her deeper concern here, I think, is when she talks about disapprovers, she's talking about racism. She's talking about prejudice and the fact that her child's opportunities or self-esteem could be at risk. I mean, this is probably really what she's most concerned about when she talks about the disapprovers.
Right.
So then what we're really looking at is, you know, the child will process its experience, including any prejudice, including racism. It will be filtered through the family lens. And this is very important, that the family's what teaches the child what it means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so then what we're really looking at is we have to have discussions in our family about this. And, you know, sometimes the way parents handle disapprovers, so to speak, you know, is that they don't talk much about it.
Yeah.
And that is not the right way to go because it leaves the child internalizing that.
And making shameful meanings.
Exactly. And they do internalize that. Well, if you have discussions about, you know, how any of us are unique and different and whatever prejudices may befall us, then
mm-hmm.
you're encouraging the child to be proud instead of ashamed. But if you don't do that, you know, if you don't really discuss it in the family, if you fail to discuss it, then the child will tend to internalize it. So, you know, that's a very important point because, you know, a lot of times parents don't know, you know, what should we do? Should we make a big deal of it? You know, should we not, you know, not mention it? You know, and you just have to discuss it as it comes up and that you have to, you know, judge for yourself how that happens and when. But as far as strengthening, you know, the sense of belonging to both worlds, it's a very, very important point. And you can learn that from other multiracial, multi-ethnic families. You know, like I have a friend, and maybe you have some friends like this as well. I have a friend who is Jewish and white and raised her children, and the father is African-American, and she raised her children with the Jewish holidays,
mm-hmm.
and Hanukkah, and she's a single mother. But she also made sure that her sons visited their the father's side of the family in the summer, and especially as teens, they would visit, you know, aunts and uncles, and she incorporated a lot of the food, the soul food, into her family's parties and celebrations. So, for example, her son who's getting married, she threw an engagement party for him, and the food was chicken gumbo dinner. So, you know, she's really been able to blend that, and her children know both sides of, you know, the roots of their heritage. And, and that's just, it's just really a wonderful, wonderful, rich experience.
You know, it's such a topic. I tell you, I have to tell a little story. Dr. Gale, once again, we're talking to Dr. Gale. She is the family therapist on Parents Place, parentsplace.com/expert/family. I remember hearing a story, a woman speak, who was a grandmother, and her daughter had married, she was a white woman whose daughter married an African-American man. And she, one Christmas, she would always take the grandchildren. She was trying to honor the heritage of the father. The grandmother was trying to honor the African American, saying, "I'm open to this, you know, I'm welcoming." But she would always bring the children books about their African American heritage and things that were, you know, typically African American black, you know, black history things. And her daughter got furious and she said, "Why do you consider my kids, you know, why don't you consider the fact that they are half white?"
Right.
You know,
right.
Because we have this tendency in our culture to say, you know, to say you're just one race.
Right.
And so, and the kids, you know, the daughter had gotten so hurt by her mother not, you know, wanting to honor both sides of our heritage, that I think we can really mess our kids up when we don't talk about that and talk about the wondrous things we can get from all the different heritages.
Yeah, and talking about it is what's going to bring it out, you know,
yeah.
Because you can't really blame the grandmother in the
no.
sense, you know, or
she
the,
was,
you know,
yeah.
who's trying to do, you know.
Yeah, she was trying.
Her part or whatever, but there does need to be the discussion between the mother and the grandmother saying, you know, this is the impact of this, you know, this is a child of both races,
right.
You know.
Right.
So we have to honor that. And it's very, very important.
We're talking once again to Dr. Gale Peterson, parentsplace.com/expert/family is the place to go. Our next question, tips on prenatal bonding with your unborn child. Dr. Gale, this comes from Barbara. I am 17 and pregnant.
17 weeks
17
pregnant,
weeks
actually.
Pregnant. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay, I was wondering. I'm 17 weeks pregnant. I know the vibrations of my voice can be heard within the womb, but when can the fetus hear my husband talking to her from outside the womb? He often babbles to my belly button, and we are interested in playing music and reading books to our unborn child. What do you think about this?
That sounds lovely.
I know.
Doesn't that sound lovely?
I do, yeah.
Well, you know, it's just great. It's great that they're doing that because, you know, we've talked a bit about this before, but it bears repeating that all the research points to the ear as the most developed sense organ prenatally. And sound prenatally, sound is actually heard at 23 weeks of pregnancy by the baby because the baby responds to it, but the ear is actually functional by the 16th week, so we're not really sure what happens between the 16th and the 23rd week. The baby may be hearing, but just not yet, you know, you don't yet hear or see the response.
Right.
But by the 23rd week, you do. The baby will respond to sound. So, and the baby recognizes the sound of mom's voice and dad's voice before it's born.
Yeah.
You know, it'll turn to the voice, you know, outside when the baby's in their arms. So make no mistake that the ear also is a very sensual organ in the sense that it provides soothing. You know, this is what lullabies are about and the mother's heartbeat. You know, all of these things are very soothing. And language lessons begin in the womb. But we also have to kind of look at the other side of this, which is that unpleasant sounds are also traumatic to a baby. War sounds and this sort of thing can cause prematurity, in fact, you know, in that kind of loud, stressful sound. So it has to be sound that, you know, would be perceived as pleasant, so to speak, you know, loving and you know, the lullabies and the, you know, and this is all very stimulating and good. So, you know, I mean, there's just nothing they can do wrong here in terms of what, you know, they're describing, reading books or playing music. All of these are prenatal bonding exercises, really. In fact, two prenatal bonding exercises are, you know, when you talk to your baby, because it does respond, but also you can push really gently on a foot, or, you know, if you feel through the womb, you can sometimes feel where a baby's foot is, and you can push on it, and it'll push back.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually interacting with
yeah.
your baby prenatally. And why not?
Yeah.
You know, why not start there? So
oh, yeah.
I guess that's what I think about it. How about you, Lydia?
Well, I just think it's wonderful. I mean, I it's interesting. Before I even knew I was pregnant, I went to see Pulp Fiction, the movie,
uh-huh.
and I got so ill from seeing it.
Oh, really?
And I realized, and then shortly after that, I found out I was pregnant, and I was like, well, no wonder.
Uh-huh.
And I made sure that I remember taking pains to make sure that I wasn't around war and things like, you know, war movies or things that were really violent. I just couldn't deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it partly has to do with the unborn child I was carrying. But I also know that different babies have different personalities in even in utero. They have
unlike
a little,
rock music,
yeah, like they,
classical.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So somewhat different. They respond differently to different kind of music and, you know, just pay attention. I just sang a lot.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, I sang a lot. So,
did
and
you
I,
do that then after when your son was born?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I still sing.
He's hearing the same sounds that he heard in the womb to some extent, you know,
yeah.
through the waters. And it's
yeah.
pretty amazing that they can hear all of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that and, you know, I should also mention IQ is, you know, intelligence quotient
yeah.
is also has been linked to you know, the ear and babies being talked to prenatally and stimulated prenatally
mm-hmm.
With sound. So, very important thing.
So, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Go for it. I'm Lydia. This is Hits Live. We've been talking to Dr. Gail Peterson. You can find her page, parentsplace.com/expert/family.